The eighth is of the seven, number two kingdoms of Bible prophecy. In the previous article, we identified that the Millerites could not see Rome as more than pagan and papal Rome, though they did address the distinctions between those two powers. For the Millerites, the distinctions between pagan and papal Rome did not lead them to recognize that papal Rome was the fifth kingdom that followed the fourth kingdom of pagan Rome. After the disappointment in 1844, Sister White identified the three powers of Revelation 12 and 13 as the dragon in chapter 12, then the papacy, as the beast that came from the sea in chapter 13, that was followed by the United States as the beast that came out of the earth. After the foundation was laid, the Lord opened the light upon the threefold union of the dragon, the beast, and false prophet, that in chapter 16 of Revelation leads the world to Armageddon. The line of prophecy in which these symbols are found begins with Revelation 12, with the dragon that sought to destroy Christ at his birth. The dragon is said to be Satan, Revelation 12, 9. He it was that moved upon Herod to put the Savior to death. But the chief agent of Satan in making war upon Christ and his people during the first centuries of the Christian era was the Roman Empire, in which paganism was the prevailing religion. Thus, while the dragon primarily represents Satan, it is in a secondary sense a symbol of pagan Rome. In chapter 13, verses 1 to 10, is described another beast, like unto a leopard, to which the dragon gave his power and his seat and great authority. This symbol, as most Protestants have believed, represents the papacy, which succeeded to the power and seat and authority once held by the ancient Roman Empire. Of the leopard-like beast it is declared, "There was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints, and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations." This prophecy, which is nearly identical with the description of the little horn of Daniel 7, unquestionably points to the papacy. "Power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And, says the prophet, I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. And again, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword." The 42 months are the same as the time and times in the dividing of time, 3.5 years, or 1260 days, of Daniel 7. The time during which the papal power was to oppress God's people. This period, as stated in preceding chapters, began with the supremacy of the papacy, AD 538, and terminated in 1798. At that time, the Pope was made captive by the French army. The papal power received its deadly wound, and the prediction was fulfilled: "He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity." At this point, another symbol is introduced. Says the prophet, "I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb." Verse 11. Both the appearance of this beast and the manner of its rise indicate that the nation which it represents is unlike those presented under the preceding symbols. The great kingdoms that have ruled the world were presented to the prophet Daniel as beasts of prey, rising when the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. Daniel 7:2. In Revelation 17, an angel explained that waters represent peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Revelation 17:15. Winds are a symbol of strife. The four winds of heaven striving upon the great sea represent the terrible scenes of conquest and revolution by which kingdoms have attained to power. But the beast with lamb-like horns was seen coming up out of the earth. Instead of overthrowing other powers to establish itself, the nation thus represented must arise in territory previously unoccupied and grow up gradually and peacefully. It could not then arise among the crowded and struggling nationalities of the old world, that turbulent sea of peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. It must be sought in the Western continent. What nation of the New World was in 1798 rising into power, giving promise of strength and greatness, and attracting the attention of the world? The application of the symbol admits of no question. One nation, and only one, meets the specifications of this prophecy. It points unmistakably to the United States of America. Again and again, the thought, almost the exact words, of the sacred writer has been unconsciously employed by the orator and the historian in describing the rise and growth of this nation. The beast was seen coming up out of the earth, and according to the translators, the word here rendered coming up literally signifies to grow or spring up as a plant. And as we have seen, the nation must arise in territory previously unoccupied. A prominent writer, describing the rise of the United States, speaks of the mystery of her coming forth from vacancy and says, "Like a silent seed, we grew into empire." G.A. Townsend, The New World Compared with the Old, page 462. A European journal in 1850 spoke of the United States as a wonderful empire, which was emerging and amid the silence of the earth daily adding to its power and pride, the Dublin Nation. Edward Everett, in an oration on the pilgrim founders of this nation, said, "Did they look for a retired spot, inoffensive for its obscurity, and safe in its remoteness, where the little church of Leyden might enjoy the freedom of conscience? Behold the mighty regions over which, in peaceful conquest, they have borne the banners of the cross." Speech delivered at Plymouth, Massachusetts, December 22, 1824, page 11. "And he had two horns like a lamb." The lamb-like horns indicate youth, innocence, and gentleness, fitly representing the character of the United States when presented to the prophet as coming up in 1798. Among the Christian exiles who first fled to America and sought an asylum from royal oppression and priestly intolerance were many who determined to establish a government upon the broad foundation of civil and religious liberty. Their views found place in the Declaration of Independence, which sets forth the great truth that all men are created equal and endowed with the inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the Constitution guarantees to the people the right of self-government, providing that representatives elected by the popular vote shall enact and administer the laws. Freedom of religious faith was also granted, every man being permitted to worship God according to the dictates of his conscience. Republicanism and Protestantism became the fundamental principles of the nation. These principles are the secret of its power and prosperity. The oppressed and downtrodden throughout Christendom have turned to this land with interest and hope. Millions have sought its shores, and the United States has risen to a place among the most powerful nations of the earth. But the beast with lamb-like horns spake as a dragon, and he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed, saying to them that dwell on the earth, that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword, and did live. Revelation 13:11-14. The Great Controversy, 438-441. The passage identifies that chapters 12 and 13 are identifying the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet, the three powers in Revelation 16 that lead the world to Armageddon. Those three powers each have their own special chapters that covers the identical prophetic history. The last six verses of Daniel 11 begin with the words, "and at the time of the end," which was 1798. Then the six verses identify the final movements of the papacy, until in verse 1 of Daniel 12, Michael stands up and human probation closes and ushers in the seven last plagues. In verse 44 of chapter 11, the message of the hour that enrages the papacy and initiates the bloodbath that takes place just before probation closes is represented as tidings out of the east and out of the north. The message east and north represents the final warning message, for it is proclaimed just before Michael stands up. It is the third angel's message that is proclaimed during the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. Daniel represented the message as twofold. The message of the north that enrages the papacy is the message identifying the king of the north as the papal power, and the message of the east is the message of the children of the east, which is Islam. Of course, it has other important meanings as well, but east is a symbol of Islam, and the Antichrist is the counterfeit of the true king of the north. The message of the third angel that warns against receiving the mark of the king of the north, the mark of the beast, also warns that Islam will strike at the point that the cup of iniquity is full for the United States, and the United States fills its cup of iniquity at the Sunday law. Revelation 13, beginning with verse 11, and then onward, identifies the very same prophetic history, and it also begins at the time of the end in 1798. What nation of the New World was in 1798 rising into power, giving promise of strength and greatness, and attracting the attention of the world? The application of the symbol admits of no question. One nation, and only one, meets the specifications of this prophecy. It points unmistakably to the United States of America. The Great Controversy, 440. The same prophetic history is covered in Revelation 13, verses 11 through 18, as is covered in Daniel 11, verse 40 through 45. As with the verses in Daniel, the story of the role of the United States ends with the close of probation as the United States forces the world to accept the mark of the beast. Then, as in Daniel 11, the message of the hour is presented in chapter 14. It is the identical structure in both passages, with the exception that Daniel's verses are describing the papal activities, and Revelation 13 is identifying the role of the United States. With those two lines, we find that chapter 17 of Revelation covers the same history, but the role of the dragon, represented as 10 kings who are the United Nations. The three chapters considered line upon line identify the role of the dragon, the beast and false prophet, which in chapter 16 lead the world to Armageddon. So it is of significance that John informs us that when chapter 17 begins, it is one of the angels that had poured out the seven last plagues that comes to tell John of the judgment of the whore of Rome. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither. I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Revelation 17:1-2. With the Millerites, it was about pagan Rome and papal Rome, but at the end, it is about the threefold union. As with her identification of those three powers in chapters 12 and 13, she clearly identifies the woman of chapter 17 as the papacy. The woman Babylon of Revelation 17 is described as arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness, and upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots. Says the prophet, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Babylon is further declared to be that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Revelation 17, verse 4-6, 18. The power that for so many centuries maintained despotic sway over the monarchs of Christendom is Rome. The Great Controversy, 382. So, when does the prophetic history represented in chapter 17 begin? So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Revelation 17:3-6. In order for John to see the woman, he is prophetically carried into the wilderness, which John himself has already identified with two witnesses as the 1260 years of papal rule in chapter 12. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the face of the serpent. Revelation 12:6-14. John was prophetically transported into the wilderness time period, but verse 3 and onward specifies exactly where in the 1260 years John was taken to, for the woman had already become drunk with the blood of persecution, and she was already the mother of harlots. John was taken to the end of the wilderness period, for the woman had already drunk of the blood of persecution, and the Protestant churches, were already returning to her fold and becoming her daughters, for she was identified in that period of time as the mother of harlots. She already had daughters. John's testimony in chapter 17 begins in 1798, as did the same prophetic history which represented the beast in Daniel 11 and the false prophet in Revelation 13. Just as with the other two lines, when chapter 17 concludes, chapter 18 then identifies the message of the hour. Three prophetic lines, one for each of the threefold union. They are all illustrated upon the same historical structure beginning in 1798 and continuing until the close of probation, and all three emphasize the final warning message. Habakkuk's tables addresses the subject of Revelation 17 in much greater detail, so I will now jump to the riddle that is represented in the chapter that sets forth eight kingdoms of Bible prophecy. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth, and there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come, and when he cometh he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. Revelation 17:9-11. Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar, Thou art this head of gold. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. Daniel 2:38. Daniel also told Nebuchadnezzar, Thou, O king, art a king of kings. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. Daniel 2:37. Nebuchadnezzar was the head, and he was a king, and he was a king of kings, for he represented the first of the kingdoms represented in the image. Nebuchadnezzar was the king represented by gold, and other kingdoms and kings would be represented by the other metals in the image. But Nebuchadnezzar was first, and therefore the king of the kings. Another level, which we will not address right now, is that the kingdom of Babylon represents the kingdom that seeks to counterfeit Christ, who is the true king of kings. In the beginning of Isaiah's testimony of the 2520-year prophecies, Leviticus 26 is seven times, Isaiah identifies kings as heads, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. And within 65 years shall Ephraim be broken, that it be not a people. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son. If ye will not believe, surely ye shall not be established. Isaiah 7:8. Isaiah is just setting forth the starting point for the two 2520-year time periods against the northern kingdom of Samaria and the southern kingdom of Judah. And as he does so, he includes two witnesses that the capital city of a nation is its head, and that the king is the head of the capital city. A head is a king and a kingdom. In the Revelation, the same line of prophecy is taken up as in Daniel. Therefore, when John is taken to 1798 and presented with the riddle that identifies that there are seven heads, he is identifying that there are seven kingdoms. He is then told that five of the heads or kingdoms have fallen. In 1798, the fifth kingdom of Bible prophecy had just fallen as it received a deadly wound that would eventually be healed. John, who is standing in the history of the time of the end in 1798, is also told that one of the heads is. The sixth kingdom of Bible prophecy began in 1798, so when John was prophetically conveyed to 1798, the kingdom that then was is the United States, and he was further informed that the seventh kingdom was still future to 1798, for it had not yet come. The seventh kingdom that was still future to 1798 is the United Nations, who are represented by 10 kings, and are the subject of Revelation 17. But there is also an eighth, who is of the seven. Rome always comes up eighth, and is of the seven. There is much to say about the contents of chapter 17, but we are simply identifying the eight kingdoms of Bible prophecy represented in chapter 17 in order to see how the Millerite understanding of four kingdoms squares up with the eight kingdoms of Revelation 17. We will address this in the next article.